Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 283, recorded January 24th, 2012. Author. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, so you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out in the 2012 Ford Fiesta and at Ford.com/technology. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. Upgrade to a premium domain and trade in your old clunkers by visiting MacBreak.Hover.com. And use the offer code MacBreak when you buy. And by GoToMeeting. Collaborate face-to-face remotely with GoToMeeting with HD Faces. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and use the offer code MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers everything Apple's up to and then some. And this is a good week. By God, we've got like 25 people in the studio today. It's not that many. 15 people in the studio. And they
can actually say that they were just passing through.
They literally, I came in and, you know, a Tuesday we usually have 4 or 5 people.
Right.
And there's 3 times that number and I'm going, uh-oh. And then I realized, it's Mac World week. That's why all the Apple fans are in town. Andy Inaco's going to be flying out on Wednesday?
Yep, I'm taking the comfortable flight tomorrow afternoon. I'll be in town Wednesday night.
Great. Look forward to seeing you then. Adam Christensen flying up from San Diego tonight.
Yep. Or no, tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning.
Yep.
So everybody feels like it all,
the travel day.
It all begins tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Adam's from MacCast. Of course, Alex Lindsay also here. Thanks to all of you for joining us today. Before we get to the announcements of last week, because those all came after last week's show, let's just talk about, what is it, iFan Expo? Mac World Expo?
All of those
things. Expo?
Mac, we were having this conversation, and we were talking about it before you came in. I had this conversation with some people this morning, and I think what we decided was it's Mac World, iWorld.
And
so,
then
most people are still just calling it Mac World.
But then it says the ultimate iFan event.
Yes.
So it's a little bit of that as well.
There's a lot of cross-branding going on.
Yeah,
they're mixing it up.
That strikes me as equivocation. We're not sure exactly what we are, but
we're in a transitional moment.
We'll be one of these soon.
Either way, if you like Macintoshes and you like music, this is the place to go this week.
Will there be any Macintoshes?
No, probably not.
So cross that one out.
There'll be
nice
a couple,
idea, but
you know there'll be a couple monitor stands.
Yeah. Oh, come on, there's got to be. Well, there's no Apple. We know that, but that's been a couple of years. We're used to that now.
I'm speaking about iCloud and
okay.
Lion. So,
there's a
ish.
Which track is that? The iFan track?
I believe that an iFan ticket will get you into that track. Yes, but that's on Thursday afternoon.
Okay, excuse me, but this has gotten way confusing. So there's the
iFan
pass, the all access pass, the exhibits pass, the pre conference workshops, Mac IT. These are all different passes and vastly different prices. $25 to get into the exhibits. I don't even know what Modest Mouse. That's a party, right? Modest Mouse Blast at the Warfield. The iFan Pass is very reasonable. $100. That gives you. So there's a whole track, Andy, of stuff like you're going to be doing.
Right. What's happened is that instead of having to spend like $1,200 to get a week's worth of all you can eat training. They seem to have broken it up to the things that are more like public interest events so that you can spend a little less. You can spend a lot less money, like $30, $40, and just get a track of things that are going to be interesting and informative, but not necessarily something that you'd be charging to your company as training expenses.
Hey, let me ask. This would be good. This is a little, we got a little sample group. How many of you have the exhibits only pass? You're here for Macworld. You're 3 of you. How many of here have the iFan pass? 2 more of you. How many here have the all-access pass? 1 more. So the rest of you are just kind of going to stand out front?
Most of them are not. Are the rest of you going to Macworld? No. Oh, so there's a number of people who are not going to Macworld who are just here. But those of you who are going to Macworld, it's like 50-50.
So people are getting what they wanted. They're not being pushed into paying $1,200 for something. And
$25 for the exhibit is fair, I think.
Yeah, and usually a lot of those, there's lots of oftentimes exhibit pass codes floating around.
Right. And actually, I think with the iFan pass, so you get both of your talks are iFan pass, right, Andy?
Yes, I believe
so. We determined that, right?
Yes.
And there's film events, art showings. There's the Macworld, iWorld, Midway. Is that a carnival?
Well, mostly that aside, there's going to be a lot of geeks there anyway. Like, real, like pounding a nail into your head kind, buying the heads
really?
Off a chicken.
Is that
kind.
True? Huh?
Well, geek is a geek, and anytime you get that sort of crossover appeal.
You have geeks and then you have geeks.
And then Mac casts Adam Christensen. Are you doing some talks? What are you doing at Mac?
No, I'm not doing a talk this year. I'm going to be covering the event.
You'll be there as a journalist.
Those people that can't be there. Yeah. Well, I actually am going to be up. We do the Mac Roundtable live recording, and I'll be there for
that. Where are you going to do that?
Thursday. That's off. I think those are going to be off kind of in conference rooms. I'm not entirely sure. I'd figure it out when I got there. It's totally different this year, so I don't know what to expect. I'm going to go and just enjoy it. And
no, it's going to be fun.
Which is what I normally do at that show.
And this is what Paul Kent told us that they were going to do, which is basically, and it was what it has been for some years, it's really a gathering of Apple fans.
Right.
Although the world of Apple fans has so broadened in the last 2 years, thanks to the iPhone and the iPad, that they are not the traditional Apple fan anymore, right?
I mean, well, yeah, and I think that it's good. I mean, even what we saw in the iLounge for CES, and what we'll see probably more of in at Macworld and iWorld, is this is a chance for people to really play with all these cases and all these other things. So there is a good reason to go to the expo if you have an iPhone, which a couple people have. I mean, it's done okay. And so you can instead of having to go to just the Apple Store and see what they have, or just something else, you can actually
certainly
get a much wider view of everything that's being created in that ecosphere, and it's a big ecosphere.
So people go to shop.
I think a lot of people going to the expo are going to. They may be window shopping, but I think they're going to be looking and kicking tires, and typically they're there ready to take your order.
And how many do you think of this new crop of iOS users will be converted into, as somebody who bought a Mac in 1984, and you know this, Adam and Andy, and I know you know this, Alex, that was a group, and we were all in that group, the early Mac adopters, mm-hmm. who were passionate. We're the cult of Mac, the guys who had the Apple shaved, like Leander Connie's Apple shaved in the back of our head. How many of this iOS group, there's a much more casual group. People who use the iPad today maybe don't even really know that they're in a cult. How many of them do you think become that? And does that matter? Or maybe that whole idea. I mean, I feel like we're a little bit of an anachronism, like people who used to go to the West Coast Computer Fair. It's just a different.
But I think that, there's some people that are, there's a lot of people that own Fords, and then some people that are really into the
right.
Ford. So the thing is that I think that maybe it's 5 or 10%, but it's 5 or 10% of a pretty massive group of people that are really intense about it.
Does change, though. If you're Apple, it changes how you think about your customers, how you think about your business.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that was.
I've seen a lot of people. The iPad get enlightened and pulled into it. I've had a number of people come up to me and say, I was a Windows user and I got an iPad or an iPhone or an iPod, and then you get that trickle down effect, right? They
right.
then get, maybe they get an iPod and then they get an iPad and then they get a MacBook and then a MacBook Air and a Mac Mini, and suddenly now they're buying a Mac for their wife. And I've heard that story over and over again. And what they always seem to come back to is, I never knew there was a better experience, and the
right.
iOS device exposed me to, wait, computing can be, you mean computing could be fun and better and more enjoyable?
I overheard someone at the coffee shop when I was buying my coffee this morning, literally talking about, I think I'm just going to, I think I'm moving that direction because I just want my stuff to work. like they just,
Is that really the case now, though?
That's
admittedly,
the person said this
for
morning.
Years, well, I know, I'm not deny
no,
that.
It's, but
for years, I think people just chose Windows because it was the default. For the don't even think about it. It's Windows, and it's what you get.
I really think the big deal, the gateway drug of iOS devices is the first time that their iPhone or their iPad goes wrong, and the first time they go into the Apple Store, and they a guy or a woman just goes there and fixes it and doesn't charge anything for that. That means that a year later, when it's time to buy a new notebook, someone's going to remember that and think of those times that they tried to go to Best Buy or wherever and got charged $100 to have their hard drive scanned for any nude pictures of themselves that they might have taken that could then be shared online.
And I think that
it's a much better experience. I think that they when you're in the Apple ecosystem, it's an easy way to impress your customer with how good that a company takes care of you.
Well, I think also for the technical person, Windows is just as secure as the Mac. But I know a lot of non-technical people, and Windows is not.
That's changing so rapidly. But I mean, you got to acknowledge that is changing.
But I talked to one.
I think the distinction between Macs and Windows has become mostly academic at this point.
I mean,
maybe I'm not.
I don't know. All I know is that a week doesn't go by that I talk to a client that is sitting there now rebuilding their PC and asking me how to, you know, like, oh, I can't do that because I have to rebuild my PC because I got all these viruses and I got da 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 da. And, you know, and it's just. I mean, literally, not a week.
Now, I should be clear. I only use Macs. I have Windows machines all over the place. We use Windows in the business office here. But given the choice, I always use a Mac. But I'm not sure how much of that is habit at this point and how much of it is that there's a significant...
And I have Windows on every Mac.
You've seen this picture. I'm trying to find it now on G+. It's a classroom. It's a college classroom. Have you seen this picture? And it's all Apples. It's like 150 people, all Apples. There's one guy with an Asus. In the middle. And it's such a funny picture, and I'm trying to find it, but I can't.
I certainly agree that the gap has become a lot more narrow. I don't think it's purely academic, but now, whereas 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, I could simply say, oh, God, no, there's no difference between them. There's such a huge difference in usability between a Mac and a Windows machine that you'd have to have a good reason to go with Windows, like everyone in your office uses one, and they won't let you use virtualization. Now, I still think that the Mac is easier to use. I still think it's more reliable, but it's close enough now that if you said, yeah, but what I really want is a nice, slim, compact device, and I don't necessarily want to spend $1,000 or $1,200 on a MacBook Air. Here's a nice Asus device that costs about $799, and I can actually afford it. Then I'll say, yeah, okay, maybe, sure. Windows 7 isn't quite as slick, but Windows 7 will keep another $400 in your pocket.
So here's a number of people, including Scooter X, have posted this. It's kind of a low res. But I don't know if this is... Because they're all, you know, it's hip to have an Apple, or if there really is a legitimate difference. But there's this one guy, he's right here. And it's all, it must be interesting to be a college professor these days. And look, there's one other Windows.
And how do we know he's not running a Hackintosh system?
That's true. And yet Apple's market share certainly doesn't reflect this.
Unless you count iPads.
Right. Now they're with iPads, they're suddenly in the ballpark, right? Here's a high-res version of the same picture, so you can see it. I love it. The one guy with the Asus. Actually, it's a girl. Maybe there's a few other. That might be a Windows machine.
Well, I think part of it is also the branding that Apple does, where you have, you know, having that nice big logo that's lit up.
Makes that
much clearer.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Well, it does change. I mean, it's kind of an academic question, but it's an interesting question to me, especially as we go into this iFan event. Who are the Apple fans? How are they quantitatively different than they were 5 and 10 and 15 and 20 years ago? And how does this change how Apple does its business? Certainly, Apple is cognizant. They took computer off the name. They really seem less focused on OS X and Macintosh than ever. They still sell a lot of the Airs. By the way, the interesting thing at CES to see all of these Air wannabes, and it's just blatant. It's like, no, we look just like an Air. I mean, they don't even try.
Well, and someone asked me, they said, it looks just like it, and the price wasn't that much different. I was like, why don't you just...
No, some of them are cheaper.
They're somewhat cheaper, but I mean, it's...
It's in the $1,000 range.
Yeah. Right, but I was like, yes, you can just put Windows on your Air, and then you're fine.
Right.
You know, anyway, so you still have the same form factor.
I have to say, I think that... It is a change, kind of a change in the weather that maybe Apple and its users should be somewhat aware of. But let's go to the iFan event and find out, because that's where the hardcore. I got apples shaved in the back of my head.
Well, and I think that it's less geeky. The one thing that I noticed about going to here's the deal: when I went to I actually spoke at a Windows at a Microsoft conference maybe 12 years ago, and the one thing I noticed was everyone was in suits. I mean, there was all the tech guys. It was all the admin guys. You know, like everyone everyone's there. So and so everyone was in suits, and everyone was the guys who ran the company that had all these things everywhere. And when I went to Macworld, it was all of these, you know, real people that hack their computer, you know, like that customize their own computers, customize what they're doing, and so on and so forth. And I think that now we're going to get to something that's much more consumer, you know, people who want to find cases for their iPad.
Well, I think also on the education side, and looking at the mix of what they've done, they're taking into account this changing dynamic of the type of person who is an Apple owner. And they're doing a lot more stuff on the creative side with music and art and kind of focusing on the experience and what you do with these things. And I've seen a lot of sessions that are, you know, they're in things that they're doing, like creating artwork on iPads and having an art gallery and doing music stuff and kind of trying to really mix it up and make it more about the fan experience. And you still have those tracks where there's Mac stuff and they have the IT track for the IT guys, but they're recognizing it's maybe a little smaller percentage of the mix as opposed to what it was, you know, 3-5 years ago.
Yeah. Although I have to say, it's a little disappointing when you go to I love Paul Kent and I love Macworld, but I have to say it's a little disappointing when you go to the show floor and it's iPhone case after iPhone case after iPad case after iPad case.
Yes, yes. That's very tedious.
I love going to the back, Tiny Town, what Merlin Mann used to call Tiny Town. The little developers who don't even have booths, they just have stands. That is more like the old days. It shows that there are still small companies doing interesting stuff. But you don't see, you know, Microsoft's not there. You don't see, is Adobe there anymore? I bet not.
No.
You don't see these big companies. You don't see Apple. It just feels to me like, does this represent the Apple community? I think in a way it does. It's the generalization of Apple.
Well, and I think that you still have this connection. I mean, when you're in the airport and you see you need to move outlets around, you know, to get plugged in. As a Mac user, you always look for other Mac users. I mean,
because they're nicer.
Yeah, they're nicer. They're not going to sneer at you.
You're right. It's still a little bit of a community, a little bit of a,
you know. So I think
that subculture.
I think that there's a culture there that is the, you know, like South by Southwest has a culture, and right. Other things have a culture. I think that there's a culture there that is a certain. I don't know whether they really are the same as homogeneous as they used to be, which I think is good, probably. But there are a lot of different folks that are connected via their, you know, their devices, and you know. And if they show up there, they're probably arrogant about their
Knut says, and this is the fundamental question, is Apple, and you're the guy to ask, is Apple alienating its pro users by paying so much attention to the consumer side?
Well, a lot of us want something else, but there's nowhere else to go. So,
that's,
I mean,
a good,
you
point.
Know, so it's not, you know.
Well, what about Linux?
Linux.
What about Unix?
I keep on looking at Linux, you know, for a lot of our tools. The problem is I'm not going to get my Adobe products on there.
And
so it's not. So you.
Wouldn't it be smart for Adobe to start developing for Linux?
It's so much code.
But it would be, and it's like less than 1% of the desktop market. Yeah.
The problem that Adobe has is that they have so much code. Yeah. You know, like changing anything is a big ship.
There are,
you know?
At this point, there are no great open source Unix or Linux-based alternatives for kind of those fundamental programs. You know, people
GIMP
are getting
is there,
mad
but
at
it's
me.
Not,
there's
it's
the
not.
GIMP, but it's not the same as Photoshop.
Yep.
There are a number of actually interesting editing programs, but nothing like Premiere.
And there's no market for it now. I mean, the thing is that with Final Cut at $300, you know, there's a high end market for Avid. There is a integrated market for Adobe, and then there's the rest of the market that Apple has taken.
Seems like an opportunity for somebody. Just saying.
The market's
we are going to also be at Macworld. We are doing iPad today from the show floor Thursday, I should say. Sarah Lane and I will be wandering the show floor. We have we're going to broadcast that live, right, Eileen? Oh, Eileen's not there. Liz? Okay. So we will be broadcasting that live, and we will also be, of course, recording it for later download. And then we're having a party Thursday night, which is going to be a lot of fun. At the Intercontinental Hotel, 6 p.m. So if you are here for Mac Break, even if you're not, you can come. And it's not, now I'm told it's not an open bar, it's a cash bar.
keeping control of it.
Okay, I just have to know. I don't know what that means. It means that we're not paying for it. That's exactly all I care about. All right, thank you. You can buy a drink. But I did say, I said, if you said something on iPad today, I said there was a secret code. And if you said that secret code, which I don't remember, but if you say that secret code to me, I will buy you a drink.
Wow.
But I don't remember what it is.
Now everybody's going to go back and watch that.
No, you know what? If you're smart, all you go is you'll say, Ish Kabibble, that's the secret code. And I'll go, oh, because I don't remember. Okay, let me buy you a drink. We're going to talk about the big announcements, which were on a Thursday. It's interesting. Apple, even though they didn't want to be at Macworld because they didn't want to be pushed to make big announcements this early in the year, does seem to make big announcements this early in the year anyway. Just not at Macworld.
I think they just didn't like the pressure.
It's too much pressure. I can't take it.
You have to remember that also a booth the size that Apple does with the number of employees that
it's
are supporting it, you're talking about like $5 million.
Yeah, you know, but I only feel like they should do it just to support the community. You're not doing it. Obviously, it's not marketing valuable, you know, in terms of announcing new things. But it sure did support the community. You suck the wind out of the sails if you're not there. Just seems to me. But that's my thoughts. We're talking about Ford right now. You said if, you know, there's Ford users and then there's Ford lovers.
I think there's a lot of Ford lovers now.
I'm a Ford lover now. Everybody here is a Ford lover. We love the Ford technology. I drive a 2010 Mustang, a GT Premium that I love. And one of the things that Ford's doing that's so interesting is you start to see the strategy. You know, you got a guy like Alan Mulally who's the CEO of Ford, and you start to see just kind
he's
of
got a plan.
Jobs. There's a plan. Yeah. It's like, it's funny. Every company should have a plan, but it's so rare that when somebody actually seems to have a plan, it's like, wow, there was a thought.
Right.
So there's a whole idea, you know, so it started with Ford Sync, which I love in my Mustang, then my Ford Touch, and then now with AppLink. The idea is we're getting the cabin of these cars into the 21st century. Walt Mossberg says, until Sync came along, you'd get in a car, you'd be back in the 1950s. You're right. Driving along disconnected. Now you're connected to the world. But the problem, and this is, they're thinking a lot about this, and I've spoken to Alan a couple of times about it, is safety. And there's a huge issue of distracted driving. So how do we keep you in touch? Because that's what consumers want, but without making it difficult, without making it dangerous, without distracting you. And they've done a lot of research, and their research says, according to Alan, if you've got your eyes on the road, you're paying attention, your hands on the wheel, you still have the cognitive ability to make phone calls. That's why, to listen to music, the key is to keep you from looking down, twiddling dials, looking at screens. You've got to keep your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel. So that's the whole idea behind Ford Sync, is you speak to your car and it listens and it does what you ask it to do. You could set the cabin temperature, get weather forecasts, you can get horoscopes, you can listen to music, you can make phone calls. It's a whole variety. So you're still connected, but you're talking to the car. Now, this AppLink thing is a perfect example. AppLink, and you'll find it in the 2012 Ford Fiesta and at Ford.com/technology if you want to learn more, lets you control smartphone apps with voice commands without, again, taking your hands off the wheel or the eyes off the road. Pandora, for instance, they announced at CES, I think, a half dozen new apps that go with AppLink. So you could say, you know, play Pandora. I want to hear my classic rock station. It'll start playing. This is, again, I should always do this. I want to hear my classic rock station. And you hear a song you like, thumbs up. You hear a song you don't like, thumbs down. And you're talking to it, and it's listening. You can even say, bookmark this song and buy it. So if you like a song, you can say, I want to buy that later. They've got OpenBeak that reads your tweets, the timelines, or replies to you. You cannot tweet, because that would be dangerous. he's a guy talking to his car. And it's an API platform, so they've got – I wish I could find the list. Let me see if I can find the list. Stitcher, Slacker. There are a number of apps coming out all the time. And I'm sure that somewhere Sync, there's a list of all the apps now. TuneIn Radio. I'd love TuneIn Radio. Have you ever used that, TuneIn Radio?
I'm not.
It's the best radio app. 50,000. Now, this is going to kill my bosses at the radio station. But truthfully, internet radio in a car, like, it's transformational, right? There we go. Thank you. iHeartRadio, Slacker, Stitcher, and they what's not on there yet is they just announced TuneIn Radio and more. All the time more. And this is the beauty of it. Your smartphone gets updated. They don't have to update the car, but it gives you complete control, connection with the outside world. Take a look at AppLink and all the great features at Ford.com/technology and, of course, at your 2012 Ford Fiesta is at your Ford dealer. So drive one today. And we thank Ford for their support. Ford is one of those brands. It's not quite Apple, but it is. It's like one of those brands that's known globally.
They're Apple-esque.
I
think there's a lot of brands that you think about that, that are the Apple of their industry.
It's the Apple of the auto.
They're definitely the Apple of the auto industry.
Well, although people sometimes say Apple is the BMW of the computer industry.
But I don't think BMW is the is the Apple of the car industry.
All right, moving on. Let's talk about the announcement. Andy, did you go? You're close to New York. Did you get on the train?
No, I didn't go.
We didn't get up either.
Well, you know, it was 10 a.m. You know, that was kind of early for me.
I know. We went back and forth and talked about you can give me my coffee that I need. Thank you, John. Thank you so much. We went back and forth about whether to cover it live, and I'm mixed feelings. It was just, mostly why we didn't.
7 a.m.
7 o'clock. I'm lazy. I don't want to get up. I would have had to get up at 5 and go in. Yeah. And comb my hair.
Well, actually, it kind of paid off that I didn't go because it really was one of those rare times where there's an event happening like at 10 a.m. that I'm not physically attending, but I'm covering it remotely. And so woke up at, like 8:30, 9, spent an hour doing email, said, well, I'll just, I'll watch the thing. And then afterward, I'll get out of bed, shower, shave, good breakfast. And then by 10:30, 10:45, I was downloading the app listening to the rest of it. And then like playing with it for another 2 hours. And then finally, holy crap, it's 1:30. I haven't been out of the bed yet. Gave my day started on my way towards writing a column about it, doing an hour long podcast about it and doing like an NPR phone interview about it.
The life of a journalist, isn't it great, kids?
it's a lot like being Hugh Hefner, only without the naked women, the wealth, the fame, the notoriety.
But the
idea of spending the entire day in your pajamas. that part was spot on.
But I took advantage of this too because I was at home and I watched. I think The Verge had good coverage, very good coverage, and Gadget. They all did, right? All the blogs did their live streaming thing. I watched The Verge. What did you watch, Andy? You probably watched them all, right?
I had one window open with The Verge and one window, I think, with Macworld. I saw.
Oh, Macworld magazine. I should have watched them. Shoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very small room. I can't remember.
Oh, it's Tynesy.
Either event I attended or either just an event that I watched where they had it in such a small room. I think it was something like maybe five dozen people.
So small that you could look at the picture of it and see everybody and see, oh, there's M.G. Siegler. Oh, there's Natalie and Clayton Morris. Oh, it was small. It was that small.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder whether Apple is going to go that direction and, where those events become, smaller and smaller.
Well, I think because it was a textbook event, everybody thought it was going to be kind of an inside baseball-y event, but it wasn't. I think it may have been. It was a huge announcement, I think. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's a huge announcement. Adam, did you watch it at home? I presume you did.
Yeah, same thing. The Verge and Macworld, and I forget how many tabs I had open, but whoever I could get a feed from, yeah.
Right. I'll boil it down and you can correct me or add on. There were, in my opinion, three announcements and Apple buried the lead a little bit. So announcement number one was iBooks 2 and the addition of a textbook store to iBooks 2. And more than just a textbook store, I mean, these textbooks are kind of revolutionary. They're multimedia, they have video, they have interactivity, they're cheap. Now, I don't know how long this is going to last. But $14.99 or less. They started with E.O. Wilson's amazing biodiversity, a couple of chapters of that, and it's a really good example if you haven't downloaded it. It's just gorgeous. Here, I'll pull out my iPad and start playing through it a little bit. But so that was announcement number one. We're going to have a textbook store, and we're going to sell textbooks. And they had the three big textbook publishers, Pearson, Harcourt, Brace, Jovanovic, Jovovovich, Milo, Jovo, I don't know what the name of it is. And then... Pearson,
Hoffman,
and a
Houghton Mifflin Harcourt,
Scrabble-Eggum.
Harcourt, I think.
Harcourt. I can't keep track of it anymore. Harcourt used to be Harcourt Brace, and now it's something else. I don't know. I'm old. And let me just type in my password. We can get in here. So that's big. All these. That's like 90% of all textbooks. Now, I got a little point out thing. Which is that the textbooks that were on there, and I played with them, and they're amazing, they're wonderful, they were what they call the core curriculum. And now, you have to understand how textbook industry works to understand why this is kind of critical. Unfortunately, one of the reasons textbooks are so expensive is you have to go to the school boards. This is for K through 12 of the state and get approval before the state. You know, education is very state specific. There's no national thing. So what happens is they go to the California.
This is part of why it's so screwed up. This is
exactly why it's so screwed. They go to the Texas school board, and each has their own demands, and they make a Texas school book, and they make a California school book. But there's a core text, and that's what you're getting. So as it stands for $14.99 right now, what you're getting is not something that you could use in a California school.
In a California standard public school, non-charter.
Right. So
a charter school could use it.
Oh, okay. So charters, but and I presume that means private schools can get it. Mm-hmm. But not a California public school. So it says aligned. You'll see in the – can you get that over the shoulder? I don't know if you can get that. It says aligned to the Common Core.
I think it's over here.
Which
right
means,
now.
By the way, if you don't care, you're getting a ton – there it is. But that's yours.
Mine.
Oh, well.
If you want to hand it to me.
Yeah. I'll throw it. If you don't care, you're getting the a $14.99 textbook. That's the Algebra 1 textbook. Oh, the other thing I love is free samples. So you get a really good idea of how it works. Now, this is an example. If you go back a little bit, where there's an example, unfortunately, it would be nice if you could type in stuff. Right now, the way it kind of does it for you. But that's nice. You could see how a slope – I mean, I think that's great.
And this is using, I believe, the widget. This is using the dashboard dash code.
Well, we're going to talk about that because the second announcement, and Alex is now an expert on this, is an authoring tool, a free authoring tool called Author. Now, this has been very controversial, and we'll talk about that in a second. And then the third announcement, which I think was the most important announcement, at least for the world as a whole, is a separate iTunes U K through 12 support for a lot more features in iTunes U than just playing back a video or audio lecture, turns iTunes U into an amazing educational
tool. One thing
I'm
not clear about is can non-schools, like can corporations use iTunes U?
I don't know.
Boy, they really should let them.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
They should really let them.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, Web 1100 said I got it wrong. Common Core is the opposite of what I'm saying? I think it's the stuff that is not state specific, is it not? Otherwise, it wouldn't make any sense. Maybe they misnamed it. No, he's not explaining. But I think that's the idea of Common Core is it's everything except the California editions or the Texas editions. But that means you wouldn't be able to use it in those states. If I'm wrong on that, I would love to be. Common Core is a national movement to align state standards. Oh, okay. How far has that gone?
Well, it's government, so we can probably.
How's that working out for him?
but here's one of the arguments that's going to come up is that it may move a lot faster when you suddenly have all these interactive books coming, and your school system gets left out.
This weighs a lot less than a backpack with five books,
and suddenly you start seeing students using this, and their test scores going up, and suddenly the pressure on school boards will be intense.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, this will be, you know, they'll be told they need to figure out how to make this work because their students are falling behind.
This is another example. This is from the E.O. Wilson book. You can slide this along. This is worldwide photosynthetic activity. This is seasonally. Things like this a textbook just can't do. Now, I think these are kind of trivial, but they're going to get less trivial as people really start to
this is the first try.
Yeah. And this is what I like. Now, so your finger is an underliner. So, and this, boy, I wish we'd had this when I was in school. So, here's something on the photic zone. I really want to remember this photic zone. I'm going to put that right there and underline it. Now, this is the best part. This is making study cards out of it. So these are my notes.
Yeah.
And I can go to my study cards. Now, the study cards will include, you know, stuff that the publisher has put in there, glossary terms. What's an entomologist? A biologist who studies insects. So, I mean, this is a great way to study. But also, the stuff I underlined is now in here. Mm-hmm. So as I underline, I'm making my own study cards. My highlights and notes become study cards.
Yeah.
So
go ahead. It's not just that. It's the idea that the kid gets to keep this book. It's their property. They can own it for life. And not only will they have the book forever, but they'll also have all the notes that they made. Not just the stuff they highlighted, but the stuff that they typed in themselves.
So here's what I underlined: photic zone. In which photo? Right. I mean, this is fantastic. Right.
Assuming the kid owns the
iPad. I still have I still have like my high school calculus textbook and a couple of biology books that I refer to when I need to remember, okay, how do I do that? What's the algorithm for a couple of my comp sci books where, okay, what's the basic algorithm for doing this? And has not only, because I paid like, you know, $900 per title for it, I still have it on the shelf. And I also have my notes that I scribbled into it. And so I can imagine when people have to go back, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years later on when they really do need to set up something to, exactly, to remind themselves of, oh God, now my kid is learning math and I know I used to learn this. Now I got to go back and they can literally go back to the classroom they were in when they were 10 or 11 years old,
right,
and reread their stuff, assuming that we still have iPads then.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's always a problem with digital formats. Then there's other issues. I mean, one of the reasons textbook publishers love this is because there's no resale. And that there's a huge market. When you buy a $150 textbook, reselling it for $80 is very, very important. That's gone. So they make more money on it. So the real question is, do we stay at $14.99? Adam, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to comment on the notes feature, which I think is great. And maybe this is a 1.0 thing. But one thing I immediately kind of noticed and wanted to have in that feature would be some sort of way of sharing those notes. And even better yet, it'd be awesome if students could set up little virtual study groups where what I highlight and make notes of are available to other friends who might follow me and vice versa. And we could almost have a threaded conversation around highlighted sections of the book. And maybe that's just a 1.0 thing and it's something they have planned, but I'd love to see that added in.
Currently,
you can
email
learning.
Your notes, but you cannot send highlighted text. That, of course, is because it's copyrighted material. Right.
Right.
And so this is where copyrights get in the way.
Well, I think
that's fair use. It's educational. It's not the whole book, but
ultimately they could make it work just by instead of actually copying the text between
just the
users, just simply here is the marker, start at this character, end at that character.
Then you'd have to have the book.
The point is you'd have a study group and I could set up a list of the friends in my class that, you know, I want to share information with, and it's just happening virtually inside the book. So I think that might get around some of those limitations. But it was just interesting to me that here's an opportunity that the technology brings forward that it seems like it was not implemented or not. They're probably thinking about it. And again, I have to keep coming back on. It's 1.0, but I already want more. You know, it's amazing to look.
So I stand corrected. This is was just sent to me by our chat room. These are states that support the Common Core standard. In fact, California is now in that state. It's Texas that does not. Looks like, is that Virginia?
In Minnesota?
Minnesota.
In Nebraska.
And you're good. That's not Minnesota. That's Michigan, isn't it? Wisconsin?
No, Wisconsin.
No, it's next to Wisconsin. Minnesota. What is that? What state
is that? Minnesota.
Minnesota. Anyway, so a few states haven't, which means, of course, it's still a little bit of a roadblock. But California has, for instance. Most states have. So that's good news. That's good news. So that Common Core, thank you for the correction. That Common Core means that these would be legal and usable in many states.
By the way, I made a book this morning.
Okay, well that's okay. So all right, that's authoring. So let's go to authoring.
Because what they're doing with those textbooks, all I want to say about the textbooks is they're really boring right now. So the thing is they've added a little video and they've added a little code and everything else. And in their defense, you're trying to take a 300-page book. It's too much data to make it aggressive all the way through.
We don't know how much lead time they had.
I mean, they've had years.
Years?
Yeah,
come on.
Apple's been working on this for 2 or 3 years.
Really?
Yeah. And the
really, they went to E.O. Wilson 2 years ago and said, what would you like to do?
Because they didn't say what we're going to like to do. They said, we're planning to bail. Apple told them, we are planning
publishers.
To make our own books.
Right.
This is in Steve Jobs' thing. We're going to make our own books. We're going to sell the iPad and just give the books away. And if you don't want that to happen, you're going to make them interactive in here and you're going to sell them for $14.99. And the moment they move those prices to $50, Apple's got $100 billion that says we will drive you into the ground.
Oh, that's it. So you think they'll stay at $14.99?
Oh, I don't think they're going to go very high because I think Apple behind them has we will build a curriculum on top of this. This is a major part of their direction. And if you step off the line, we're going to shove you into the water. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, you know.
The other concern I have about these right now, Alex, you're pointing out, there's kind of limited interactivity, but they're huge too. I think I downloaded the biology textbook from Pearson, and it's like over two gigs.
Yeah,
and there's not a lot of interactivity.
You have
in there,
to have.
So you're kind of wondering.
This is going to sell 64 gig iPads
or 128s in the future or 256s.
Even the two chapter E.O. Wilson book is huge. It's because of all the video in there. I mean, right. it's cool. I don't know if video used in this way. I don't know. Maybe it gets kids more engaged. I don't know.
Show you mine.
Okay.
Mine's cooler than theirs.
We can stipulate that this is early days and these are not the best possible examples, but the features are there. So part two is this free authoring program. I'll let you say how great it is because Alex has used it. He's already created two books. And it's not perfect. But then we'll talk about the larger ramifications of the license and so forth. So go ahead. Tell us how great this is.
So I have a...
Actually, before you do that, let's take a break.
He got you.
I'm sorry. No, because you get... Teases don't work in podcasts because you just fast forward.
Right.
Please don't. Please. I beg of you. Instead, open your browsers. Everybody follow along with Teacher and go to macbreak.hover.com.
Everybody do it right now. Let's test the site. Site test.
No, please. It always makes me really nervous.
Site test. Hover.
There you go.
They can handle it.
It makes me really nervous. Hover is domain name registration made simple. And I know we all are always going out saying, oh, I just thought of a great domain name and quick type it in. Hover is what I do from now on when I have domain names. It is fantastic because you don't have to click a bunch of links and buttons and you miss one and you just bought something you didn't want. There's no upsell. It's very straightforward. They don't do hosting. I want to make this clear. They are a domain registrar. You can use their email services. They can give you mailboxes, but they don't host websites. That's not their point. The point of Hover, excuse me, is to make me sneeze. No, the point of Hover is inexpensive, effective domain name registration with great customer service. And by the way, that means they will not put you on hold. When you reach a customer service rep Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern during their regular business hours, they will not put you on hold. They will solve your problem, help you with your transfer, whatever it is you need, without putting on hold. They have a new feature called that they call Premium Domains and Clucker Trade-Ins. What's a good, let's see, what's your latest? Okay, we want to do an iBooks store. Yeah, let's do iBooks store. Apple suggests iBookstore.com. I bet you that's not available.
Yeah, I never thought of that one.
So it's going to search for the domain. Now, what will happen is there are people, by the way, Hover supports the open internet. Please stand with us and oppose SOPA. Thank you, Hover. God bless you. So here's some domain names that they say, well, you could have this instead. iBookstore.com is taken. I wonder who owns that. But iBookstore.tel.org.us. And then there's some with like MiamiBookstore.com.
For some reason, that is a very valuable URL.
Well, somebody owns it.
Right.
So, but what that person has said is they've told Hover, hey, if somebody wants it, we'll sell it for $1,749. Now, that sounds like a lot, but that's a great deal if you're a Miami bookstore, because if you go to them as a Miami bookstore, often they'll say, yeah, we'll sell it to you. So they've set the price ahead of time. These are what we call premium domains. You can upgrade to a premium domain, trade in your old clunkers, and Hover will refund every penny you've paid Hover for those clunker domains, domains you never used. NewYorkBookstore.com. See, that's good. So these are all premium Seattle. See, somebody went out and registered all of these domain names. MysteryBookstores.com. But you can get them from them directly through Hover. So those are the premium domains. I love this idea of refunds on your domain names that you never use. And it doesn't say it in the ad copy, but I know Hover's still doing it. If you are going to transfer your domain names to Hover, they will do it all for you without... I wish I had done this because I got all my domains locked. They will do it all for you. Just call this number here right on the front page, macbreak.hover.com, and they will transfer their concierge service. I think normally they charge $25 for that, for as many domains as you want. Domain transfers, $10, and you get an additional year on your domain. That's a good deal. And if you use MacBreak as the offer code, you'll get 10% off your non-premium domain. Hover is a great registrar. I just want you to keep it in the back of your mind. The next time you want to register a domain name, macbreak.hover.com, and we thank them for their support. They're kind of like the Mac of domain registrars.
Clean, they are.
Simple.
Mac, they're Apple-esque.
Do one thing and do it well, kind of a thing. All right, so you've been using Author, which, okay, Apple's taken a lot of heat over Author's EULA, but it's free.
Yeah, it's free.
Is it a good tool? They said the GarageBand of textbooks.
I think the reason people are upset about the EULA is they want to use it. They want to use it. A little bit of my background.
That's a good point. If it were crappy, nobody said
they'd be like, whatever. You know, but not only did they want to use it, here's the problem for publishers. If you're a small publisher, You are not going to be able to make a book that competes with this on Apple or anywhere else without this tool, without spending an incredible amount of money on programmers. And every time you want to change the page or how it rolls over, you're not going to drag it like Pages. You're going to have to write more code. And so the thing
Pages does, by the way, export EPUB. Which is the standard format.
You can,
format.
But here's the problem, though. This is going to change the way people make books. Okay. You know, my history is I wrote a big long thing in Google Plus about this. But you know, I was looking at doing a manual for a company in the mid 90s, and I was like, we should just build the whole thing in Director, you know, and make it interactive and make you click
aren't you
on
glad
it.
You didn't?
Oh, I'm really glad they didn't take me up on that. but this is what I envisioned.
Horrible.
17 years ago was this is exactly what I wanted to do. And you know what? So what you can do is if you're already using Keynote or Pages, the interface looks the same. So you can drag things in, you move things around. You've got widgets that you might have seen, you know, widgets like what you would see in iWeb. And one of the interesting things is that you can import, for instance, 3D models. And also you can import widgets, which allow you to inject dash code. So if you've written any dash code for your little widgets that you would have on your dashboard, or if you know people that can do that, you can insert them. They don't all work. So one of the things I played around with a lot is if they ask for file access, they're not going to work. Some of them just don't work for no apparent reason. So they're not all working. Like this one that says I need a drink, it doesn't work. I was really excited about putting a cocktail.
What was that going to be?
Cocktail. It was going to be
cocktail.
You're in the middle of your textbook, and you feel like, oh, I need a martini, and you could just click a little button,
Alex,
that would pop
this
open.
This is not for the K-12.
No. Well, yeah. And that's really important too. Is that this? I've already we in the last 2 days, I think we've already booked almost $500,000 of production in this app. So
what?
So
Wait a minute. wait a minute. Who and what?
When I get excited, I can sell a lot of production. So
yeah, no kidding.
So
I'm on the wrong business. So you, as in Pixelcore, have booked. Let me get this straight. In the last it came out Thursday,
Monday, and Tuesday,
have booked $500,000 worth of people who want you to author stuff for them.
Now, I will say that I've been priming them for a year, knowing that eventually someone's going to build a tool that's going to let me do this. And so we've been building content.
And what kinds of people are these? Are these
corporations?
They're big companies.
Here's the deal: is it
training material?
It's training material. So the thing is that you know this is it's all cute.
Oh my
cute.
God! I never
thinking
even
about
thought
textbooks.
About this.
Oh, this is like so. And by the way, I'm not. I don't do the Dvorak thing very much, but you really want to read my Google Plus.
This is a better market for.
Oh no! The textbook market is tiny.
It's not textbooks. It's business.
Oh my! So you
because they all have iPads, they can afford it.
You want to build a great PR piece that you're going to send to all these press that you know have iPads. You can build an interactive, instead of sending a PDF,
them?
What?
How do you get it to them?
You can publish it for free. It doesn't matter. Publish it, send them a link, let them download it.
Put it on Dropbox or Amazon S3 or...
Yeah, I mean, you can...
Oh, so it doesn't have to be on the store
for
me to
publish,
get it.
I don't think it has to be on the store. But
you
I
could, but why not put it on the store,
You can export it to a file as a .iBooks file.
And then just send it to them. So the thing is that when you're looking at what... I mean, so you look at the manual... The crazy manual that comes with your camera or your car, you know, Ford, when they pick up on this, they're going to have interactive manuals, and they're going to hire people like us to do it. So you're talking
instead,
about
when you buy a premium priced car, you get an iPad instead of that big thick manual, and it's got a training.
Or you
on
just
it.
Tell you can download it. If you bought the BMW, you probably have
some cars,
iPad.
I can't remember, but one car manufacturer is giving iPad manuals already.
So but this is now they have a development tool to do that. On top of that, you know, you buy your
this is your post.
This is my post in Google Plus.
A couple of days ago.
Yeah, the Google Plus, by the way, is my new blog. If anyone is wondering, I've given up. So anyway,
talk about embrace and engulf and devour.
Yeah, exactly. So a Kia. I'm waiting for someone who's going to have the conversation with a Kia so that I could build my shelves
right.
The first time.
Watch
this. Little videos and 3D animations and everything else that would all be possible within this.
Just so I can get in on this $500,000 market, what are the skills that are involved?
Well, see, what's exciting for me is that you still need to have video skills and 3D skills. And we happen to develop all of those skills because, you know, in Pixelcore, that's what... So the Pixelcore has been designed to solve this problem for 12 years. So we're kind of like launching there's a whole bunch of people all over the world that are getting pretty excited about it. So the thing is from a content developer's perspective, this is this is the biggest gold rush in the history of content development, because every how-to book, 90% of Borders, when Borders used to be there, was nonfiction. It was about something. And all of those books were made obsolete last week. So the thing is they won't be, you know, people will still use them for a while. But as you start to, like every Photoshop book, when you know, or 3D book, you know, here's an example. If we look at this overhead. So here's a,
can you switch
it? Did I blow your overhead?
Well, she switched over to me, but go ahead.
She switched over.
Switch it over. You can do that. Take your time. It's all right.
So the thing is that it changes. It doesn't just change. The reason that it's important that Apple owns this ecosystem and doesn't try to make it available for everybody is that they're changing the way you build books. It's not going to, you know, I don't want to do it the way everybody else has it done. I'm able to develop things that are way different. Like I started working on, we're building all of our tutorials. So we, the stuff we're doing with the government of Rwanda, the school that we're building there, which launches in a couple weeks. A year ago, we bid that we're going to do the whole curriculum on iPads. And yeah. I was getting really close to being really screwed. So if you look at this, this is just me just hacking stuff in. I did this morning just to kind of play around. So what's interesting about this one, this is the drink one that doesn't work.
So this is a book?
This is a book. So anyway, so watch. So if I take this and I go, whoop, this is a, look at this. Okay, this is a mixer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now wait a minute. So these are third party widgets?
No, this is the 3D widget that comes with the.
So Apple's done some, but people are already doing.
Well, this is this widget here. So this is just, you can import any Collada model. Collada is like as close to a standard in 3D as you can get. I download, now this is in the grand scheme of what's unfair is that. The Collada model is free, and it comes from Google's 3D warehouse, which is so you can download almost everything from Google's 3D warehouse, or you can model with Apple's free Google SketchUp and export it out as a Collada model and then import it into your book. So that's that there. If I pop that in, this movie, for some reason, this is, shows you the bugs, I think. Hold on. Yeah, that movie's not working. And I keep on breaking it. I'm not sure why. Yeah. Now, this is where things start to get interesting. So one of the things that we're looking at is how do we teach people how to do software, how to use software. And so what we're doing here is essentially you have – I first started doing the old tutorials that we had, a big screen with a little bit of text. And then I realized I can break this all up into each interface that you're going to go through in this step. I have images. Now, for a more advanced user, that might be all they need. Oh, I get it. And then they just go do it. So that allows them to have kind of free access. But, if they don't understand it, like I don't get what I'm supposed to do here, I can just pop into this. And now that's a video that actually shows you how to do that step that's in there. Then I can pop that back. So the videos are only there if you need them as a backup, but you then have all of these pieces that are here. And so the thing is that this is why, you know, you're not going to build this for other EPUB formats. You're going to build this way, you know. Then this is the test. Like, you know, you can go, you know, who was the president during the Civil War? I can check my answer. Yeah, it was
right.
Is
that Keynote?
No, this was actually, that's another widget that's already built into the iBook. You can just write these out.
I love it that they put Keynote in there too, because there's so much you could do with Keynote, and there's a whole ecosystem.
So here's Keynote. And so what I did is I took these movies and I stacked them on top of each other in Keynote, and then I exported it out to this. And so if I click on it here, that's a little quick time of a background plate that we had. And then if I just tap on it, this is the green screen shot that we shot.
Okay, because that's Keynote, tapping on it was next slide.
Next slide. And then if I tap on it again, there is the composite that
Holy
we did.
Holy cow.
So the thing is that, and so, you know, and that was, you know, half an hour of work this
morning.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You would normally put text that says tap to go to the next slide.
You put all that stuff in, but the point is that it was, as a content creator, and especially as someone who's been using Keynote and all these other things, this was a piece of cake to throw together. Now I have to decide on design and all this other stuff. We're playing around with it, but now we are focused on design. We're not being constrained by the structure, by the code, by the everybody else up until now that's been building interactive tools for the iPad have been writing crazy code. And you know, the thing is that now everyone's kind of unleashed with this. And I don't think the textbook market is a particularly large market. What we're talking about is every corporation with a brain is going to be building the training materials on how to get started on your, like, if you're selling anything, you know, the number one way to increase value of your product is to make sure people are actually using it correctly. And you know, so people, you know, they buy a phone or they buy these cameras. Almost nobody knows how to do anything but turn them on and hit play. Right,
because the manuals are impenetrable.
Exactly. So you start adding all this up and you have a much more valuable camera instantly. You know, and the thing is that...
Well, by the way, I'm going to go home and tell my kids to start learning author, because it sounds like that's a job creation tool right
there.
It is. Because content's hard. So this is really of most value for somebody who has existing content, and then they come to somebody like you... Of course,
or has ideas. I mean, you know, it's still, you know, it doesn't get rid of publishers completely. It does mean that if you've been only focused on text for a long time, you're going to have a harder turn. But if you are a publisher that's been thinking about it, that's been playing with it, and you're still, as an author, may, if you're really talented and you understand all these media pieces, and you understand design and so on and so forth, you could definitely build your own book for 70%. But most likely what's going to happen is you might end up splitting it with someone like us who will get, you know, who will split it 50-50 with you on what we get back from after Apple takes their 30 or whatever. That's still the best book deal. Andy might get better deals than me, but the best book deal that I've ever been offered is 18%, you know? And
that's unusual.
That's, you know, and that was me, unusual. That was me being really particular. And I couldn't do the book because I didn't want CD-ROM stuff in the back. I wanted it to be in the book. And I just kept on going up. I'm like, I'm not going to do all this work if it's just going to end up in a book, you know? Right. And so, you know, this is but when you look at all this training material and everything else, being able to add all that together is, it's stunning. And I think that, you know, the textbooks are great, but if you're looking at cookbooks will never be the same. I mean, you know, like, you know, we'll actually be able to make those crazy meals.
Okay, Andy.
Oh, so
what do you think?
I do think it's a real big deal, but I could almost put money right now that when you see version 1.5 of this or 2.0 of this, you're going to see this not just there to feed the textbook store, but it's going to be there to feed the newsstand. Because you think about
magazines.
The sort of, you see, I mean, as they're describing all the things you need to make a great textbook, they're talking about, well, lots and lots of text, but also lots and lots of pictures, lots and lots of media. It has to be dynamic, and you're kind of describing the problems that Sports Illustrated and the New Yorker and Time and everybody else are having to create a workflow for converting these highly designed, really high media driven newsstand publications to something that makes sense for the iPad. And it takes next to no effort to at least do a half-assed really cool, like interactive media version of a magazine. And if you actually put effort on it, and if you not only put effort on it, but you train the person who is actually starts off with design skills as opposed to people who start off with developer skills, I think this really is the path to creating content like that. Not necessarily for cheap, but with an outlay of money that really makes sense for the sort of publications they're putting together. I mean, it took me like maybe 2 hours to do. It's been frustrating me that for the past 2 months I've been trying to figure out how do you do an EPUB that has even just a grain of style about it, that isn't just simple, okay, I guess it's going to be Palatino. I guess I was able to paste a photo into between this paragraph and this paragraph. How do you actually do something that has a little bit of style and sort of puts its head above the water of design a little bit? And anybody with an hour and a half's worth of effort can take a manuscript and turn it to something pretty cool. And really all you need to do, yes, you asked a little bit earlier, like, what do you need to know to get in here? And if you're using Pages right now, and if you're using Keynote right now, you really do know 80 to 85% of everything you would ever need to know about using this product. It really is a mashup between those two apps.
How about InDesign? Because that's what book publishers use and magazines use. Is this comparable in capability and quality to InDesign?
No. It's just that they're two totally different products. This version 1.0 of this app is really keen towards doing textbooks. If you try to do like a short story with it, if you try to do something that's not really heavy media, not really heavy in organization, you know, meaning something that's not built off of an outline where it's chapter one, and then a chapter one is section 1.1, 1.2, 0.3, 0.4, 0.5, you're going to find it kind of rough sledding, or you'll have to really adapt what you have to fit into the sort of product that the iBooks author app is designed to do. The other thing that's missing is that it's really one person, one desktop, one app style of design tool. It's not very collaborative at all. It's not scriptable at all. So you really are, if you got a publication that's got multiple authors, it really has to have an organization chart where there's that one designer, that one developer at the top of the pyramid, whose job it is to take all of this content and manually slap it into whatever template you're building.
Adam, your thoughts, and then I'll get into the license issue.
Well, I think it's really, really amazing. And, you know, it's like a lot of things that Apple does where once it gets in the hands of the people, you know, they've made the tool available now. And you see, like Alex doing one thing with it. I see this being huge for maybe teachers who want to build lesson plans that they can give to the students, but they can now demonstrate through a little video what the project is or add in additional elements. I also see like potential for schools to build up a library. I think of reports that I did in school, grade school, high school, college. If those could be published and put into a school library that then other students could download and get that content. You know, you can like self-publish your own books within even just one institution. And there's going to be amazing stories like that where we're going to see people now take this tool and take it beyond even what Apple, you know, originally intended it for.
Right.
And it's going to be another one of these technologies that's going to really evolve.
How easy is it to do third-party plugins for this? Is it easy?
Well, you're drawing just a dashboard widget. It's an HTML dashboard.
I don't understand what a dashboard. Oh, it's a dashboard, like Apple dashboard widget.
It's that. So it's CSS,
JavaScript,
yep.
HTML5.
Yep.
It is. So if you have a dashboard, existing dashboard widget,
it's not all of them work. There's certain
how
rules.
How hard would it be?
There's a sandbox. You know, so you can't do things that are asking for files on the desk. You know, within the computer, and you can't. There are certain things that it won't
do.
But outside of that, if you did those, you'll know how to build these. And the thing is that's what's going to set developers really apart.
Wow.
You're going to be able to do a lot of interaction and a lot of great stuff with Keynote and a lot of the other stuff. The high end ones that we see coming out will be ones that where you start bringing in some developers doing, but web developers, not heavy duty, you know, developers that are putting stuff together and only for little bits of what you're adding to add some kind of example to it.
I think you're going to see a whole group of developers pop up that are building widgets for other designers and people to use in their books and just making them available and selling those.
There's another business. So we've identified now two really good businesses. Now,
really
here's the problem. The license says you can do this and give it away, but if you want to... Hello. If you want... Wow. If you want to sell it, you have to go through Apple's bookstore. You may not sell it anywhere else.
And you can only
take a lot of heat for this. I'm not sure
I
agree.
You have a book that only works on the iPad, and you can only sell it through there. Like, it only works on the iPad. Where else are you going to sell it?
Right.
Well, but you could get an Accelerate.com storefront and just sell the file directly.
Sure.
But given that you're paying zilch for this really complicated design tool,
I think that's kind of a fair trade.
I think that there is a lot of initial outrage because the wording wasn't so specific as to discount the conclusion that if I were to publish a novel that I wrote 2 years ago through this app, that means that I can't create an EPUB version of it that I can sell through other stores or Kindle version that I can sell through the Kindle store. That appears not to be the case. They're just talking about the actual piece of software built by this app, not the content itself.
And I think that the fact that if you want to, for instance, I immediately thought, oh, it'd be great. We were always going to do a documentary about the making of the studio and make that be maybe an iBook instead with video, but plus text, plus graphics and so forth.
And
if I give that away, I could do anything I want with it.
And I don't think that it would break the EULA for you to add advertising into the book that you gave away.
Now, somebody should read the EULA carefully that.
You're not selling it.
The other kind of poison pill in the EULA is that it's like any other thing that you want to sell through the iBook store, through the iTunes store. It's subject to Apple's approval. So it's possible you could spend 2 or 3 months creating a textbook or creating something you want to sell through the iBook store. But then Apple says, you know what? I think we have enough books about the Civil War.
Oh,
nice as your book
good.
Is, but we're not going to let you sell it through the store.
So and Webby in the chat room is pointing out the problem. Apple becomes the gateway now for educational materials, news. Suddenly, instead of just for apps, they're a gateway for content.
And the only way for this to change is for Google and or Amazon to step up and build an app that is as good as this one that will produce an open format.
That's the complaint that I hear. And I think this is the one I would agree with. There is an EPUB 3 standard, and Apple has extended it. Now, admittedly, they had to give it all these sweet features, but they've extended it, and by doing so, cut the legs out from under it. So...
So, but as a developer, I guess as someone who's developing the tools, I don't want them to. I don't want vanilla. What I want is the most interactivity.
Our sphere, they did it with podcasts. They added iTunes extensions that if you're a podcaster, you really have to support. Now they didn't. It wasn't onerous because they didn't say, and I'm thank God they didn't say. Oh, and by the way, here's a tool, and if you use it, you have to publish it on Apple and nowhere else. Thank God they didn't do that. Mm-hmm. But it's to me, it's analogous. They're extending a standard, making it better. You know, this is the honeypot. I'm not saying they're not making it better.
And by not being inside of a standard, it means they can continue to develop and continue to move it forward, and they don't have to ask anybody for any permission.
It's the Apple way. I understand.
Well, as a developer, I want to have the best. I want it to be the best that an iPad can handle. There's going to be 100 million iPads in the system by the end of this year.
What if next year half the tablets out there are Android?
I don't care. There's 100 million. here's the problem with that argument is there by the end of next year there is 100 million iPads in the system. That's the projection.
So
right now.
So there's sufficient.
Who cares if that's half of the market?
And you say the onus, and I think you're right, is on Amazon and Google to respond by making they won't because they can't, but making a similarly effective tool.
Yeah, you can't,
for a standard.
I find it just absurd to say that Apple somehow being evil by creating something that is free for their own system. And if people don't like it, don't use it.
Well, it's also stupid. I'm sorry, Adam. Go ahead.
No, sorry. I was just going to say the other thing that people are missing out on too, or not mentioning, which is just odd to me, is that Apple has Pages out there, which does support the EPUB 2 standard, I believe, in terms of its exporting.
That's right.
And I fully expect Apple to update that for EPUB 3. So, hey, here's a tool Apple tool you can use to develop your EPUB book and sell it wherever you want.
Yeah. Also, there's the practical consideration. I mean, think about how difficult it is just to create an EPUB 2 that will render the exact same way on every single reader device. Think about how difficult it is to create a web page that if everyone who has to monkey with CSS knows that now I've got to put it here's a bit of CSS code for having a rounded rectangle. And here's the exception for this browser. And here's an exception for this browser. And here's an exception for this edition of this browser. And for Apple to, the reason why this app can work is that they do control every single iPad. So they know exactly, they can promise the developer that when you develop a book with iBooks Author, it will look exactly this way on every single iPad. I can't imagine how incredibly complex this app would have to get in order to predict the same thing for every other tablet device that uses EPUB 3.
And as this article
content like this
points out from October, Amazon did the same thing. they don't support EPUB 3 really in their Kindle Mobi format. So everybody, I mean, it makes sense. These are private companies. They're going to act in their own interest. I don't expect them to support
standards. I don't see why the amount of it would literally triple or quadruple the engineering for Apple to build something that would do this level of work, and then it would only work for a couple months before the standard, you know, was
changed,
and it would be shifted. Vanilla. Yeah. And why would they go through all of that just to support somebody else's business model? It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. You know, it doesn't make any sense for them to go through the extra effort to do that when they could, you know, build this. And again,
what if Apple said, hey, you know, your web browser, HTML5, is a nice standard, but we could make a better web browser that would make sites better, more interesting, more interactive, and all you have to do is make your website work with our browser.
Then that's what everybody does.
Explorer.
Then you'd have to, no, but there is an attempt, admittedly, but there is an attempt to support a standard because you want an open web.
Well, it's all about where you are.
They're kind of doing that because they already have their own extensions to WebKit that are specific to Safari. At the very minimum, they decide to take standards that aren't really ratified yet and make them available to Safari before and support them first before anybody else. Things like the drop shadow effects, things like text effects that weren't quite ready yet. And there, you can always tell the difference between the website of a really good Mac developer versus anybody else because they're using all kinds of cocoa. They're using all kinds of really cool tricks that are specific to Safari to make their site look just 8 leagues better than anything else out there. But the bottom line is that if Apple is free to do that because they're the ones who are going to be taking the fall, if they create an incompatible system that nobody supports, they've just thrown a whole bunch of millions of dollars in training into their own toilet system and they're going to lose all that money.
Well,
so,
but the sneaky thing
take
to
the
do...
risk. They reap the rewards, they take the losses, so they can take that sort of risk.
The sneaky thing to do, though, is to, and you could do this with the web, is to make something that's much better than the existing standards. Because standards, admittedly, slow, political, committee. So you could do the same thing with the web. This is a thought experiment. Make a browser that supported pages that were fantastically better. Thank you for thinking. Fantastically better. and said, hey, just use our browser and the world works better. In effect, this is what they've done for textbooks. That would undermine, now, admittedly, the market would rule, et cetera, but that would undermine the idea of a free and open web. Is this not undermining the idea of a free and open information interchange via textbooks?
I guess I want performance. Like, I want it to be
best. Yeah, that's why the honeypot works.
You know, if you want to, you know.
But that's why it works, because it's better.
You know, and so the thing is that I, you know, and I have to admit that I'm impatient. I hated school. I wanted school to be more interactive, more fun, more, you know, I was fascinated by all of this stuff. And so I want school to be great for kids. I don't really care whose platform it's on, to be honest with you, because I, you know, going to school for me was like being dragged, you know, through hell. So, you know, of these stupid books with these stupid everything else. And so
could you make it better and still keep it open? No, I guess that's your position.
I'm just saying it's too slow, it's hard. And as a person who's got to develop these books, I don't want to support them all. I just want the largest single market that I can publish to. You know, and the thing is that, and I do, and if Google or Amazon came out with something, I'd be very interested. You know, and I do hope that Google, I think it's important for Google to do this, by the way. I think that they could build something that would make it easier to develop. I think what they've done with, I've moved to Google Plus. I'm a big Google fan, and I think that, and I'm hoping to see them do something that makes it easier to develop across these formats. But Apple shouldn't dumb themselves down just because everyone else is dragging through the mud.
I think this is a very fundamental argument in general in technology, and you're right. Lowest standard is somewhat of a lowest common denominator. It has to serve a variety of platforms. But that reason we have standards is so that no one company can dominate what is so vital to a democracy, so vital to the world, which is the free and open interchange of information. If one company dominates that, it's an Apple world. And what Apple is doing is what Apple would have loved to do with the web, and I don't know why they didn't. Maybe they still will, which is to say, well, but we're good. And look, a textbook admittedly isn't the best format, but it's universal. It works everywhere. You don't even need electricity. It is a standard that everybody can read. Paper, ink, everybody can read it. You're now creating a standard for people who own iPads. I think it is a very, very negative thing to do to the world. It is a way of saying, hey, we can make it better. If all you need is to own one of our fancy devices, and you'll have a much better experience. You'll have better access to information, better access to education. And I would call on textbook companies, publishers, to turn their back on that. I don't care if Ford or Salesforce wants to do training manuals. That's different. But I would call on companies that are responsible for the dissemination of information to make the world a better place to turn their back on proprietary extensions. They're very sexy. They're very appealing. And that's exactly the problem, because what it means is the world has to own an iPad. And that's exactly what's wrong with this whole thing.
I think the challenge for them will be that if they turn their back.
It's greedy.
No. My prediction is they turn their back and Apple will spend $20 billion on building a free education, a free textbook system, you know, that just comes with your iPad. You know that, and I think that was in the book. That's what Steve's original vision was. I'm not going to deal with any of these guys. You know, I'm just going to build my own, and Apple has the money to do it.
I don't give a crap if Apple wants to develop apps for their iPad. That's a business model. We're now talking about something that is very important, which is textbooks, which is education, which needs to be open and accessible to the world. I don't see Apple making any one of the things that was missing at this announcement was, and we're going to make sure that every student in America has an iPad. I don't see anything like that.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good point. But I'm sorry, Adam, you said that they did address that point?
I said they did not.
They did not. Okay. Yeah. Exactly. I didn't hear about anything like that either. That's a good point. But can we spend the next hour talking about all the different barriers to education that every single implementation of courseware has? There are school systems in which they are issuing Windows laptops because it's a more open idea than simply having to force to one vendor for educational hardware. But it does lock people into Windows and also Windows support. How about the language problems where school systems have X percentage of kids in every district who aren't really natural English speakers? speakers. They're working on extracurriculum to address that, but they're not learning math quite correctly. They're not learning other subjects quite correctly because they're not learning their original language.
Well, does this solve those problems?
School systems that can't afford to keep updating their textbooks because they're so expensive.
Yes, well, I agree there are other problems. Let's not add new problems.
The iPad has problems, but welcome to the world. There's going to be a problem here everywhere. I'm glad that if there are school systems that have looked at this entire proposal from start to finish, looked at the economics of it from start to finish, and also looked at the needs of their students and their teachers and decided that iPad courseware, a combination of textbooks that they're buying from publishers and also encouraging and training their teachers to create fine-tuned courseware specifically for the classes that they're teaching, if that makes sense to them, I'm glad there is this now this new rational option available to them. I can't be angry about this.
And I do not believe that in the next 10 years, every school system has to realize they're going to have to find the money. The federal government's going to have to find the money. The states are going to have to find the money. Students in the United States will not be able to keep up with the rest of the world if they do not
have
access. No. Access to a computer. So the thing is that's
a good argument for open source.
But what I'll say is that they're gonna drop $500 per student somewhere, and the question is where they're gonna do that.
Let's have them buy iPads.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying I don't know whether it's iPads or HPs or whatever. But the thing is that is not a cost that's going to have to go across those school systems no matter what. Obviously, Apple's making a play for that they have a good version of it.
By destroying what is essentially a much more open and free flowing system by making something so much better. I would presume textbook companies.
It's so communist.
Exactly how all standards work. You can always make something better that is not that is proprietary, and that's why
I hate the web. This is the bottom line.
It's unfair to the greasy spoon diner across the street that gives everybody the trots who eats there. They're being pushed out of business by a really good, clean, delicious diner across the street that does a much, much better job and serves a much, much better product. I mean, the presence of Apple in this market is, if someone feels that strongly about open source software, great. Come up with something that's 80% as good as this tool. That is this easy to use, that's this reliable and produces this kind of results. That's great. I mean, I'm not an Apple fan I like to see them make more money than anybody else and grab a market, but again, I don't like to see arguments that are dogmatic in nature. Just because something is ideologically unsound, that doesn't mean that it shouldn't be on the market.
No, and if it is just another store, like it's okay. Well, you have a choice. You could have this textbook or this textbook. You could buy an iPad or not. Then you're right. I don't have a problem with it. What I would have a problem is if it ends up cutting the legs out from under a standard that has the potential to run on an OLPC. Or any computer or
there's an enormous number of companies that have an enormous amount of money that if they decide to, they could build a development tool that would compete with this. And if they don't have the vision to do that,
this is the problem.
And they get cut out, it's their own fault. I don't get along in groups very often. I don't like being dragged. The thing is I spent my entire school. I spent my entire school being dragged down because I couldn't. I was just constantly like ready to do six other things and constantly being dragged down by the mass of the class. And the thing is that it's just. And I don't mean to sound as elitist as that probably just came out. But the main thing is I was very passionate about school, and by the time I was in third grade, I just stopped engaging. I just turned off. And what these textbooks, I have to admit, the reason I'm so excited about this and the reason that I'm so pushy about it is because I've been dreaming about these textbooks since I was like, 10. You know, the thing is that this is not just replacing textbooks. This type of technology changes the way schools can work because as they move digital, it means that you can stop having grades. You can stop having grades like grade 4, grade 5, grade 6. You can start customizing the curriculum to every student. You can start doing a lot of things that you're going to start seeing because everything moves into a digital format. And the fact that we're going to delay that by another decade because no one can figure out what standard they want to work at is a horrible, horrible thought to me. You know, and as I said, I've been very impatient. I, I, I've been trying to do these kind of tool, this kind of stuff for a decade. You know, I've been dreaming about it for 30 years. And so the thing is that I am excited about it, and I want a great tool. I don't want to wait anymore while these little bureaucrats try to figure out which way they want to go. I want to force something, and if people want to match it, then they can match it. You know, but the thing is that I just don't think Apple should have to, you know, dumb it down.
No. I've made my point. I mean, I just think that it's important to consider the potential consequences of something like this. And, you know, you could look at Khan Academy and say the same thing. Look how Khan Academy has transformed education and made education available. Well, you look at
what we haven't even looked at is a lot of these Harvard, Berkeley, Stanford, they sell networking and certification. They're already giving away their education. How much longer before they start putting free textbooks? Like, no, here's the textbook for our physics. Here's the textbook for our whatever.
Basically, you can already go take all these. And this is, by the way, I was really excited about iTunes U for that reason, because it puts all of these classes in the hands of people who cannot go to college.
And before this app existed, it was too difficult for them to spend the resources to put all of their classroom materials online and to build interactive books and to do all of these other things. And so the thing is that we could see an enormous number of these high-end colleges putting this education out. I think that that's from an education perspective is exciting.
Adam.
Yeah, no, I was just going to comment on the whole textbook thing. And I think it's easy to get away from the fact that what Apple is doing is not ubiquitous in terms of supporting the standard, but it's not exclusive either. They're providing a new platform and a tool to get books onto iPads and devices, but they're in no way, I think, saying that you're forced to do that. So I don't want to drag us back into that conversation, because I'd like to talk a little about iTunes U. But, you know, there's nothing to preclude somebody from developing workflow where they produce an EPUB or they could produce a Kindle standard version and then move into the Apple tool and produce their iBook version and sell it everywhere. And I think a publisher or anybody making that content would be cutting out huge portions of their market just going after Apple. I think a lot of them are going to want to go after Apple and be in the iBook store and build these books. But I see very few people going exclusive, even with the tool as it's.
Well,
as
and that it, it, that was a conversation we had on Twit with Ed Bott and Mike Elgin, who had a similar disagreement. And the point Ed had made is that in general, what happens is it's a lot of work to do each of these versions. And so what does happen is publishers do have to make choices. Just as it's a lot of work to develop for Android and iPhone. They do end up making choices. And so that's the risk. I agree. I don't think that it's a clear and present danger, but it's the risk. And it's one of the reasons I don't like seeing one company try to co-opt an entire industry. If in fact, you know, you have all, you know, Amazon, and I'm sure Amazon's not going to roll over and die. Mm-hmm. This is a big business for them. If in fact you have Amazon, maybe Google too, getting involved in this. I think HTML5 is a great standard. I'd like to see support for HTML. This is HTML5 plus, and that's the problem, right? Mm-hmm. And so let's see if we can, maybe we could do it without the proprietary plus. I don't know. A lot of companies say the proprietary thing is, well, we're just making it better. But really, what they're really saying is we want to corner a market by having proprietary incompatible extensions to a standard so that we can own it. Does Apple want to own the textbook market? Probably. Will they? Remains to be seen. I think you're right, Adam. I think that there will be a lot more variety. I hope that's the case. I hope that's the case. And I hope that the fact that Pearson, McGraw-Hill, and Harcourt Brace, or whoever they are, what is the name of it? Houghton, Mifflin, Harcourt?
So many names.
Is it Houghton or Houghton?
Houghton, I think.
I'm going to say Houghton then.
Houghton Annie.
The fact that they're all three on there, but not on the stage, I think everybody's hedging their bets a little bit. I think people are watching.
I think they're definitely going to develop into a lot of different. There's going to be a lot of different formats. I don't think that Apple's going to have a definitive. I think what I'm excited about from the application by this application is I do think other people are going to build tools that do this, and I think that what happens is this creates an arms race for building.
I hope that's
great,
the case.
Great stuff. Like, yeah. No longer can you keep on packaging the past into a Kindle.
This is one way to improve education. Absolutely.
Yeah, and so the thing is that you know, you now have to start thinking outside the box, and people are going to have to do it. And if Apple starts making inroads, people will build tools to do EPUB 3 and everything else, because they want, that's a big market, and they want to take advantage of that. But it's enough of this text.
iTunes U, Adam. You said you wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Well, I'm just excited about iTunes U because I think it was one of these underutilized resources that was available.
I think people didn't even know it existed because it was buried. Yeah.
Yeah, it brings it to the forefront. But the big problem it always had was it was sort of this kind of podcast remote learning thing. But then you still had to go to a website to get the materials, right, the supporting materials for these courses that you could take. But it's, you know, it's Steve Jobs' vision of dropping out and dropping in, but in a virtual sense. And now with the app, they're bringing it all together where all of your course materials are in one place. You get the PDF. It seamlessly transitions back and forth between iBooks and the iTunes U app. Your highlighting and notes go along. Everything syncs. So it makes it much easier to experience these courses. And I love the fact, too, that it's streaming. That was another problem, is a lot of these courses have a lot of video. You'd have to download all of it. Now you can stream it right on your iPad. You can, you know, answer review questions right in the notes within it. It keeps it all in one place and makes it much easier to just have the experience and puts forth the exposure for these things right there, you know, with an app.
And so here's Duke University, Core Concepts in Chemistry. You could subscribe for free. They do have some paid elements. For instance, the Wolfram General Chemistry Course Assistance, $5. So you can add that in. But then the rest, there's 471 pieces of material, including the lectures, the notes, the syllabus. I mean, this is just...
Well, and how exciting does this get when they start doing interaction? I mean, you know, like when these big colleges start posting some of this.
It's huge. Yale, my alma mater, has always done these open courses. I've been taking, I mentioned this before, Don Kagan's course on death. But it's just video lectures. Now it'll have the notes, it'll have materials, it'll have, you're right, tests. This means that, and you don't have to, by the way, have an iPad, although it's sure a lot better on an iPad. You could do this on an iPod Touch. Or an iPod. But again, it's proprietary. Let's acknowledge this. I suspect that the amount of effort that that colleges put into making an iPad version probably goes a long way to making it available on the web as well. I would hope so.
They didn't get rid of it in iTunes though, right? So you can download iTunes for your PC and take it that way.
Yeah, it's Windows or Mac. That's right. It could be on any computer. So if I'm going to take Core Concepts of Chemistry, look how nice this looks. We've got a tabbed thing. There's interactivity. You see, I can actually participate in this. There's my course notes. All these other materials are available. I mean, this is, you could take a Duke University, one of the top universities in the world, Introduction to Core Concepts in Chemistry, free if you have a computer.
Isn't that a cool statement that they're making, though, that the value thing that you're buying is the credential. The information is worthless.
Well, it's funny because I served on a committee at Yale to digitize Yale's assets. And that's exactly as you said and as Adam said, it's about the connections you make. It's about the piece of paper, the sheepskin you get. They've always seen it as their mission to put the content out. Yale said, and I think every university or many universities say this, look, our job is to distribute this information. That's and we want to do it freely. We're not trying to make money off of it. But the idea of making this available and they have to put a lot of money into this. This is not a trivial or cheap thing to do.
Right.
It's just fantastic. It's in a way, I think it's marketing for a university. So that might be one of the reasons they're willing to do this. We'll see. I mean, I think it fits the mission. Most universities are nonprofit, right? iPad and iPhone app development. Stanford's put this course out every year. They update it every single year. In the past, they've made some of the materials and the lectures available. Now, it's all here. The lecture slides, my first iOS app, iOS 5 walkthrough, all of this stuff. If you wanted to become an iOS developer, this is a course taught by Stanford computer science professors and Apple employees. Many of them, our favorite Apple apps, came out of this course free. Fantastic. Just fantastic. I'm going to subscribe to that one. I take this course every year. I never get any better, but I take it. Yeah.
And now I guess it's open to K-12. I'm curious to see how that works or what's put forth there. But just the ability to share that coursework and lessons among schools, I would even imagine, is going to help everybody in the long run.
Exactly. That was the first thing that struck me is this is huge to share curricula, to...
Well, and you can have students doing their research papers in iBooks Author, for instance. You know,
where that's an interesting idea.
You know, where they're able to, you know, they're really able to dig into all of that and put together really interesting reports. I know if I was a teacher, that's as everyone watching the last half an hour knows, if I was a teacher, they'd all be building it in iBooks author.
Saying that gives you the ability to set up a virtual library. You know, those can go into a repository, a server on the school's, you know, system, and you can have that there for the next generation of students coming through to do their research off of, and then add to and expand and then put their stuff back in. And I think that gets really, really interesting.
I'd love to see Apple do a competition of like best on a certain subject, best student built iBook, you know, on physics or something like that. So it can only be 10 pages long, you know, and then and it's going to go into the iTunes library. And it's something you have 1,000 students, you know, and maybe the grand prize is 20 max for a lab or something like that.
And most of the people watching are really smart. If imagine that these guys, you know, and gals who watch, by the time they're like 14 or 15, they now have already taken college courses in computer science or physics or whatever they're turned on by. If you're motivated, if you want to learn, the opportunity to learn now is just phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a revolution. And so it's you understand it's a mixed – I have mixed feelings about this. You know, and it is such a huge opportunity. And it's so – education is so important to our future. This just in. Steve Jobs' widow will be sitting next to Michelle Obama at the State of the Union tonight.
Wow.
Don't know if that means anything, but breaking news. We're going to take a break and come back with more. Do you want to do iOS and Lion tips and all of that picks?
I got them.
I know what your pick is.
No. I'm not gonna...
and we'll leave the rumors for next week about the. Just let me just poll you real quickly. If Apple's going to come out with an iPad in March, which they have every year up to now. Wouldn't they announce it next month? Are we going to see an iPad? Are we going to see an Apple event next month? Andy?
I would cautiously vote yes.
A Retina display makes a lot more sense when you have iBooks.
I sure does.
Also notice that all the elements in iBooks Author are double resolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Adam, you agree?
Yeah, I think it's going to happen in the next month or so, yeah.
It's exciting. Be very exciting. Steve Jobs, Virgin has named an airplane after Steve Jobs, by the way.
Do we think that
I don't know if, like, you know, every time I hear like the name of a plane, what was the quote they put on the it's actually written on the nose
stay
of the
hungry
plane.
Stay foolish.
Yeah, and exactly. Now you know how many arguments they had, like, in that boardroom of God forbid this plane should crash.
Oh, that's
you know
a good
that
point.
The one video clip is going to be that low, that shredded piece of wreckage, stay foolish, coming out of a swamp.
You saw that the International Bus Association, or whatever they call it, are pissed off about the Priceline ad where William Shatner dies in a fiery bus crash. This stuff can ruin a business.
They're also upset about the finale of The Young Ones, too. So they hold a grudge.
We're going to take a break. We've got Adam Christensen here from MacCast. We've got Andy Iannotko here from the Chicago Sun-Times, both about to fly to San Francisco for Mac World Expo. We've got Alex Lindsay here from the Pixel Core and his brand new business, iBookAuthors.com. I don't know. What are you going to call the...
Just DB Garage.
DB Garage is going to do it all? Yeah. That's going to be the business.
Yeah.
If you need help making your next iBook, this is the man.
Call me in a month.
I'll bring.
Yeah, he's already booked.
I'll bring my resume, my interview suit. If I can get a half hour of your time tomorrow.
Liz, learn iBook author now. Stat. It is. I didn't even think of it. You've booked that much business already. I just didn't even think of it.
Now, to be fair, I will say that I've been talking about developing for the iPad with many different
No, you've
clients
wanted to do this forever.
Since it came out. And so I kept on saying, oh, if we only have Pages doing it, well, this is better than Pages. And it's not the normal clients I have. It's different ones. But I've been talking to like 8 or 10 of them for a year. So it was just me saying, okay, now we can do it.
Now we can do it.
Because I've been hedging my bet. I've been like not saying anything about it, not calling anybody because I didn't know how I was going to develop the content.
You could have come over here and just whispered in my ear, you know, you might want to learn how to do this.
Well, there was nothing to learn until Thursday.
It's a good thing to learn how to do.
It'd be really good if you had video cameras. Oh, wait, you do.
Wait a minute. We know how to do that.
Yeah, see?
This portion. And by the way, if we did a book, I would not put ads in it. Somebody was saying, don't put ads in it. You could. I'm just saying you could. I would.
But if you, here's the thing: is it costs money to do those things? So there are some people that
it's promotional.
Great. You get a free book. If for us, we would do them as promotional. But
but
for other people, instead of charging people, if all you had to do is swish through an ad.
But see, this is how it sucks you in, because I could do it on the web with web standards, or I could make an iBook. It'd be so much cooler.
Yeah.
See how it sucks you in?
Yeah.
And I could sell lots of iPads for Apple. This show brought to you by GoToMeeting. Now, this I'd like to sell you. I was talking the other day to, I was giving a tour to somebody. Oh, it was our Lullabot. It was our new web design firm. They're going to be doing the Tech Guy site. And they're a virtual company, as many companies are these days. And they have to have meetings with developers, designers, business people all over the world. And Jeff, who lives in Providence, Rhode Island, said, I said, how do you do this? He said, how do you keep everybody? He said, GoToMeeting. I said, oh, I love hearing that. GoToMeeting. It's, you know, for years we've used GoToMeeting as screen sharing. So, you show your screen. It's good for, you know, the obvious use. I've got a keynote or a PowerPoint presentation. I want to show a client, make him a pitch. So people would use it like that. Very easy to install. The client doesn't have to have any software installed ahead of time. It just clicks a link and it installs itself. It's fast. It's secure. And then they added HD faces. Now, suddenly, you've got video conferencing built in with the same platform, easy to use, crystal clear video, HD video. This is a revolution. GoToMeeting with HD faces from Citrix is really fantastic. I want you to check it out. You know, just the idea of seeing the people you meet with, seeing their body language, their faces. It's how you make connections with your clients, with your colleagues. It's how you can run a business virtually, just like Lullabot. I didn't ask their permission to use their name, but hey, he told me that. It's true. So here's the deal. You go to gotomeeting.com, visit the website, gotomeeting.com, click the try it free button. And the promo code is MacBreak, and you can try this free for 30 days. So this is, you know, I'm not asking you to do anything without trying it. All of our advertisers, we always ask them to give you a free trial of some kind. This is a good way to do it. GoToMeeting.com, click the try it free button. It's that big orange button there. And enter in the offer code MacBreak, and you can try it free for 30 days. All you need is a video camera. Almost everybody has one now. If you've got one on your iMac, you've got HD already. Works great on the Macintosh. You know what's nice is that they don't need to be using a Mac or Windows or you using it. You can just, you know, everybody, it's completely cross-platform. Everybody can use it. GoToMeeting. Give it a try. I think you'll like it. And we thank them for their support of Mac Break Weekly. So had you before the show, did you talk about the Academy Award nominations?
No.
They're out.
No. This is for show. Albert Brooks and Patton Oswalt, OMG.
No. But I like the Best Picture nominees. The Artist, which I haven't seen, but that's a black and white silent film.
Yeah, 10 nominees though. I mean,
I know it's too many. The Descendants, which is a great film with George Clooney. I do recommend, kind of a downer, but good. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. It sounded painful. Is that a Jim Carrey movie?
No, that's the Tom Hanks movie about the child who was lost his father in the 9/11 attacks.
Oh yeah,
but with Tom Hanks as the deceased.
Really? Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The Help.
Although,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Interesting. Bridesmaids is nominated for Best Original Screenplay.
Rightly so. Rightly so.
And very funny. No movie. Pixar movies nominated for animated. For animated awards.
They must hate that because it looks like there's three DreamWorks, right? Kung Fu Panda, Puss in Boots, and Rango. Aren't those all the other guys?
No.
They're not Disney.
I can't remember whether Rango is. I think, yeah.
Rango's Paramount.
Yeah, exactly. That's fine. I was also Best Actor in Supporting Role, Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill is now an Academy Award nominated.
He should be. He was great in Moneyball.
Which is great. It's just that, you know, three years ago, like, you don't picture, you know, which one is different from the others. So just goes to show the right actor in the right role.
Jonah Hill's kind of the chubby guy who's always like, I got a picture of him. He's one of those great character actors that you don't know their name, but you immediately know them
right when
you see them.
Right.
And he was good in Moneyball as the whiz kid. He was the nerd in Moneyball. Good casting.
Oddly enough.
Also, Moneyball nominated for Best Picture. Mm-hmm. Midnight in Paris, which I just watched last night, is wonderful. It's a Woody Allen film. Hugo, also in Paris. Two films in Paris. I liked Hugo. Don't see it in 3D because you have to wear strange glasses and it's weird.
You do see it. I'm curious to see what this will say about Best Cinematography. It's also nominated in the Cinematography category. given that cinematography is defined as the photography, how does this look as a photograph? Given that it's 3D, so it was never, there's no analog to two dimensions at all. I wonder how that's going to play.
He has an advantage. I mean, it is Scorsese.
Yes.
Midnight. Moneyball.
No nomination for Andy Serkis. Thank you very much.
You know, that's a little disappointing. Andy is the guy who became the character actor in he was Gollum, and then he did an amazing job in The Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Right. That's what everyone was sort of had their eye on, whether or not this was going to demonstrate how does the Academy feel about motion capture actors in actual, like, best actor
nominees. As a visual effects artist, I'm on a couple of lists of alumni and guys that work at high-end visual effects, and the Andy Serkis nomination was extremely controversial, anything.
Well, the question being, how much of it was his performance?
So much of that work is being done by animators. So the thing is that he provides some kind of backbone of that piece, but every single shot is being redone by a group of animators. Right. That, you know, he's definitely making it easier for them, but a lot of the shots are completely rebuilt. Right. That don't use that by the end of it, there's nothing left. It was animators were kind of up in arms about the, because I think he did, he was nominated for Golden Globes. Yeah. And the animators went crazy.
The movie was nominated for visual effects, which is the animators award, isn't it?
Yes.
So,
but they were just like, so many of them that had worked on that film were just like, okay, so. We worked on those shots, and
yeah. Know, why does Andy get the nod? Yeah,
I know someone who worked on Lord of the Rings. She was telling me about how the problem with doing the motion capture was really, really great, but you get down to the fact that with a character like Gollum doesn't have like Andy Serkis style like muscular legs and actual physique, so you have to change the motion capture to fit this guy who's essentially, you know, a crack addict with like 2% body protein and 1% body fat. Right.
Did Brad Pitt get nominated for Benjamin Button? Didn't he? Because that was all fake too, right? Wasn't it?
A section of it was fake. I think the first half. Yeah. And then after that, it was.
I guess there was some real acting in there. There's a great video on YouTube that Weta released on how Andy. So if I can get it to run, I don't know why our YouTube is so slow in here, but that Andy shows how they did it, and this was with that new technique where they have a camera on a stick,
right?
And so they were able to, yes, he's in a mocap suit, but he's also getting his acting is captured in a camera,
which really makes a difference.
So that's they have a 3D video with him going.
Well, and here's the thing, the one thing I will say in the defense of nominating him is that I could see Gollum in the Into the Ape. You know, when I was watching Planet of the Apes, you could see expressions.
Have you watched
like
this
Gollum.
Making of ever? Because you will see how his expressions are literally transformed into the animation. It's quite a good, I wish I could get it to play. Well, you can always go to YouTube and watch it. I think that's what YouTube wants us to tell you anyway. Just don't watch it on our show because they'll just pull it off. Even though, anyway, he did not get the Oscar nod. But that's neither here nor there. But I think a good conversation. Thank you for turning it tech.
You know.
Who wants to do, I don't know, an iOS tip?
Okay, I got an iOS.
Who's in the mood?
I got an iOS tip.
All right.
So this is actually Michael Schultz posted this on my Twitter feed last week, but then someone else did the pick. So, and I didn't know this. There was a complaint that I had, and I know I'm going to sound stupid now, that you want to find a word on the page, in Safari on your iPad or iPhone. So you type it into where you would normally hit, where you normally Google something or hit, you know, search Google. And, you know, I don't know why, but it just sits right over the keyboard, and so you don't notice it. But at the very bottom of that list, it says, on this page, 31 matches. And if you click on that, what you're going to get, I think, there we go, is you're going to get...
Where is that? I never saw that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I was saying. So right at the... When you type something in, you'll see the Google... and then right at the very bottom,
when
it says, on this page.
This?
I don't know when
it
they added it. I bet it's been there forever. Mm-hmm. And we're just being... So, anyway, I felt... Michael Schultz sent it to me. A couple of other people did, but he was the first one. And I was kind of... I felt silly. So basically, when you hit profile, and what it's going to do is... It's easier if you just kind of drag down the Google, you know, the list, so you get rid of the keyboard. But then if you click on this page, 31 matches, You can pull this up here like this, and you can go and you can climb. And
so now, if you did a Google search for something, but you really wanted the text in the page, this would be helpful.
So you just type it in there. But now I can just hit the forward buttons, and it'll jump to every time that profile in this case. So it's a tool that we use a lot in Safari or Chrome or whatever you're using. It's just that I couldn't figure out how to do it in my iPhone, and that's how you do it. So you just go ahead and do a search, and then at the bottom you'll see that it's easier to drag that.
It's so subtle, this on this page thing.
Yeah,
and we did actually we had this as a duh tip on iPad. You may not have noticed, but once you pull up the keyboard, there's also a find in page search above the keyboard that does the same thing. So thank you. This is a long term complaint that we didn't have find in page in Safari on iOS. You do now, twice. How about a lion tip? Anybody?
This is sort of, I believe it's a general macOS tip. How many times do you try to like resource a piece of text you got from the web or you got from one document into an email or something like that? And suddenly just the other day I was trying to share with somebody what my flight number is going to be, what time I expected to land in San Francisco. Then suddenly, oh, dang it. It's like italicized, oblique, blue Helvetica. And now not only that in the mail form, but also now the next thing I type is going to be italicized blue Helvetica. If you go to the edit menu, there is paste and match style, which means please ignore all formatting information with the text in the clipboard and just use whatever text formatting is already being used. There's actually a shortcut for that that, believe it or not, I only motivated myself to look up last week. Command V is paste. If you do command option shift V. So you have to hold down the command key and the option key with like your thumb while you hold down the shift key and then type V. Then it will do a paste and match style.
Okay. Yeah, I use that all the time and it frustrates me. There's a few apps that don't support that. And it's becoming more and more prevalent as apps support cutting and pasting HTML natively. Very often I don't want the HTML. I just want the text.
Right.
Yeah, that's actually a bug in iBooks Author right now. So it doesn't paste and match style.
It doesn't do it.
No, it has it in the menu. It's not working. It's buggy. But I use that probably a couple times a day when I'm pasting something that I'm trying to into another document that's supposed to look nice.
All right, time for your picks, ladies and gentlemen. Adam, do you have a pick that you could share?
Yes, I do. I do have a great pick, and it's not directly related to the iBooks thing, but it looks very much like iBooks, and it's a note-taking application. And I've used a lot of different note-taking applications. What I like about this one is it kind of brings together a bunch of features that are in a bunch of different ones. And so it's called Note Shelf. I think it's $4.99. on the App Store, and it allows you to set up little notebooks. And what's nice is you can pick a color or cover style. You can pick different types of papers. They have business papers and additional papers that you can download. They also have in-app purchase, so you can buy new covers and things like that. But it comes with a wide variety of those. And then you get a little shelf metaphor that looks like iBooks, and you can group your books, your notebooks, into little categories on your shelf. And then just within the app itself, the kind of key features for me, it's more about handwriting. So, I've played around with great apps like Penultimate and some of these for taking handwritten notes. But with a stylus, when you're taking handwritten notes, it has that zoom in feature where you can turn on the magnifier to find a section of the page and then write down at the bottom really big. But then it translates your writing into what it would be a normal sized handwriting thing. Because it's so hard sometimes on the iPad to write really small.
Right.
So now you just write in this area at the bottom. And then the other feature that's built in that some other apps have had that I really like is it has handwriting protection. So you can actually set your wrist on the iPad in a defined area and you can adjust the size of that area and actually write on it. And if you're writing in the full mode, so say you're in portrait mode and you're writing, it'll actually move down automatically the wrist protection as you move your hand down the page and you're writing. So it has all that. And then on top of that, it has the ability to reorganize your notes, move your pages around. They just added Evernote and Dropbox support for syncing. You can write out to PDFs right into Dropbox. It just goes on and on. And it's I've started to take all of my notes on the iPad by handwritten notes in this app.
So, for a long time I've been recommending Dan Bricklin's note app because it had the handwriting. And it did also have the Zoom. But it's always been kind of a little clunky. And
now, this doesn't do OCR handwriting recognition.
Understand. So it just saves it.
You're going to... Yep. Yeah. Exactly. And you can also type in it, and you can also put in photos and do a bunch of other things. But I found it really useful for just keeping all of my notes organized on my iPad. And now that it, for a long time they didn't have the Dropbox and Evernote support that was recently added, and
that's just huge
over the top for me.
Yeah, because with Evernote that means it's everywhere. I could take a note and then I can export them to Evernote, and I have them everywhere.
And it's just beautiful. I mean, it's a really beautiful app. They've got great covers and all the different types of papers too. If you want graph paper, if you want organizer papers, they have a bunch of different categories.
So you use a stylus, huh?
Yeah, I use the Pogo Sketch Plus or Pro.
Right.
The one that looks like a paintbrush. You know, it's kind of tapered on the end.
Yeah, it's got a nice little rubber.
Yeah, the rubber tip.
Yep. We saw them at CES. Said how much you were the guy who introduced me to them.
Yes.
How much we like them, Alex Lindsay. Thank you, Adam. Alex, your tip. I mean, a pick.
I have to pick the, you know, iBooks author.
So you said you weren't gonna.
I weren't gonna do it, but I have to do it because I just made such a big deal. It's you know, it's, I think it's a revolutionary app, and whether it becomes the thing that leads it or it just becomes the thing that sparks it, you know, sparks this revolution. I think that it's exciting to finally push this forward, and I admit that I've been impatiently waiting for this for a long time. And I don't think it's the end. I think 1.5 and version 2.0 is going to get a lot more interesting. I think that there's a lot that I'm sure that they know needs to be added. But anyway, it's a very, very, very exciting app. And if you're trying to figure out what to do with yourself, I would highly suggest downloading it, because I think that there is going to be a pretty strong demand for people who can put this together, not just for textbooks. Don't think of it that way. Think of it as PR. Think of it as training. Think of it as manuals. Think of it as, you know, all those other, you know, all those other things. So it's nifty.
Cool. And finally, Andy Anatko, your pick of the week.
Mine is a really cool VNC like service that was released just a couple of weeks ago called OnLive Desktop. A lot of people are familiar with VNC. It's that basic technology that allows you to do remote desktop from basically Mac or Windows to pretty much anything that supports a VNC client. There are VNC clients for iOS. The difficulty is that, of course, you have to keep a Mac or a PC somewhere in your office that has the right sort of holes in your firewall to allow you to actually access it. What OnLive Desktop is, it's simply a virtualized cloud Windows 7 installation that you can then simply access from an iOS app that they give you. And not only, I've got it on the screen behind me, not only is it the standard Windows 7, but also you get a license for Microsoft Office.
Isn't that amazing? Right now, it's the full Office.
And it's the full Microsoft Office, and it will give you a virtual keyboard that's different. The touch-enabled version of Microsoft Windows 7 and Microsoft Office. So it's actually quite functional for what it does, but it will also, you can dismiss the keyboard and you can also use it with the regular Bluetooth keyboard that you've got hooked up to your iPad. And it's actually fast enough the two things I like about it. Number one, it's fast enough that you can really actually type with this. So it solves a problem that I had when I was writing a bunch of books last year, which is there was a part of the project where I could keep the entire project in Pages, the Pages app, and work on it on my iPad, then come back and then keep working on it on my desktop. There comes a point at which you have to share it with people, and then Microsoft Word is the lingua franca for a collaborative work. So in order to see people's notes and people's comments in the work log, I'd have to then switch to Microsoft Word. So at that point, now I have to really do everything. I have to travel with my MacBook Pro wherever I go. With something like this, it's at least credible if you don't have serious heavy duty need for Microsoft Office. You just want to be able to write, edit, do some, you don't need to lay out a 500-page document in it. This is actually quite credible for what it is. And the second thing is that it's actually, this is praise for this software, but it's also sort of a slap against Apple. It works just as well as iCloud does for sharing documents between your desktop and your iOS device, because as you can see here, this really is regular Microsoft Windows, and so you can pretty much do anything that you want to do in Windows with this. And it gives you 2 gigabytes worth of storage space for your office documents. But when it comes time when you get home and you actually want to take the work that you actually did in your virtualized Windows 7 space and use it on your desktop, you simply go to the OnLive.com website, and you see a very functional iCloud-ish sort of list of here are all the documents you have inside your Windows 7 cloud storage. You can download whatever you want. You can upload files from your desktop into the space exactly the same way you have to do it if you're using documents in the cloud and sharing documents between your desktop and your mobile device. So it's a really, really nice solution. Not perfect. It really is like VNC. It's not like you're running a native operating system, but it's a nice little solution for a whole bunch of different problems that would ordinarily force you to carry a real laptop wherever you go. The other cool thing is that it is free. If you go to onlive.com and sign up for an account, they will give you a free 2 gigabyte space. It is a brand new service so that they're just starting to let people in. So chances are likely that you're going to be just adding your name to a list and you'll be informed when they're ready to start expanding it even more. They're hoping that if you start to like it, in the near future, they'll offer a paid service where I think for $20 a month, you get 50 gigabytes worth of storage. Plus, they give you sort of priority access to the service. The limitation of this free app is exactly the same as limitations of really any VNC. It sort of requires you to have a good connection to the internet. So in my house, like in a home or office internet, it works just fine. If you're at like a Wi-Fi cafe somewhere where there are 30 people all working on their great American novels at the same time, you might have some stutters and blurps with it. Supposedly, when they have this paid access, they will give you sort of higher priority access to higher speed services so that at least on the OnLive side of things, if there's lots and lots of demand on the service, the people who are using the service for free won't degrade your performance if you've given them $20 a month for it.
Yeah, we talked to this. OnLive was originally a gaming system. We talked to them at CES about this. It's so cool. They actually pay. I asked them, is this a licensed copy of Microsoft Office? They said, yeah, we pay the license fee.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
The 40 million seat license.
Yeah. Well, I think there is a limit. I think if a lot of people start using this, you may get the warning that too many people are using it. By the way, I'm playing Microsoft Garden Pond, and this is on virtualization. It actually plays really well. Yeah. This is kind of a touchscreen game that Microsoft devised for probably for Surface.
Yeah. Can you imagine Apple actually optimizing Mac OS X so that for an extra $100 a year, you could run Mac OS X virtualized remotely off the iPad?
That's pretty amazing.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, OnLive, it's free right now. You do have to have an OnLive account.
Yeah.
We're out of time, but thank you so much. What a great conversation. A great discussion.
Absolutely.
All is all right now. Yeah, me and Alex.
We love to argue. So for all of you that are looking for controversy,
no,
it's good. It's good radio.
Mac,
Mommy and Daddy still love each other. Sometimes we simply have a discussion.
Yes, MacCast.com for the best Macintosh podcast. Forget this one. Just listen to Adam.
Just another one.
It's for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. MacCast.com, and Adam, we'll see you at Macworld Expo. It's exciting.
Tomorrow, not Thursday.
You bet. Alex Lindsay is at the Pixel Corps, but if you really want to give him money to make an iBook for you, DV Garage. Is that where they should go?
That's where we're going to produce our own content. So our own content is going to come out of DV Garage. So we're going to go back into the publishing business because we're now that the tool is here.
Tool is there.
We will be, Pixel Corps will still be doing some of the services at the beginning.
It all ties together.
Amazing way. We've been working on this for a long time. Yeah. So.
Well, it's great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Andy, about to get on a plane as well. Great to have you. I can't wait to see you in San Francisco.
It will be exceptionally cool to see you guys again, too.
Catch Andy on the Chicago Sun-Times and at his website, www.cwob.com. Thank you for joining us. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, live at twit.tv. And if you are of a mind to be in our live audience, I don't usually say this, but you can. It's open. The studio's open. We had people come in Sunday, knock on the window. It'd be better not to do that, but instead to email my sister, Eva, E-V-A, at twit.tv. And that's just so that you make sure that she knows you're coming. We'll set out seats and that I'm here and things like that.
We don't have any cookies. We eat cookies.
And there's Alex's shoulder for some reason that we don't. We don't know. We have cookies. Did you not get the cookies? There was people brought a box of cookies on Saturday.
For the audience.
Cookies for the audience. I thought they were supposed to bring cookies for us. Anyway, thank you all for being in the audience. We appreciate it, and we'll see you next time. Now, everybody, you get back to work or to Mac World Expo. Break time is over.